welcome to Washington Today for Tuesday, July 21st. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some headlines. President Trump gives an update on the federal response to the coronavirus pandemic as several states face big spikes in positive cases. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows were on Capitol Hill today as negotiations begin on a coronavirus relief package. And the head of the Department of Homeland Security defending what's happening in Portland, Oregon. These are a few of the stories shaping Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. We now begin at the White House James Brady briefing room. In his first coronavirus briefing since April, President Trump began the news conference outlining his plans to provide relief for the pandemic.
We'll call it phase four. I think we're going to get it done. We'll protect our workers, our schools, and our families, and protect them very strongly. As one family, we mourn every precious life that's been lost. I pledge in their honor that we will develop a vaccine and we will defeat the virus. We're doing very well with vaccine development and therapeutic development. But I want to thank our brave doctors and nurses and frontline responders. The job they do is incredible, and they are truly brave. My administration will stop at nothing to save lives and shield the vulnerable, which is so important. We've learned so much about this disease, and we know who the vulnerable are, and we are going to indeed shield them. And again, the vaccines are coming, and they're coming a lot sooner than anyone thought possible, by years. If you look at the old system and look at the new system, I think by years. The China virus is a vicious and dangerous illness, but we've learned a great deal about it and who it targets. We are in the process of developing a strategy that's going to be very, very powerful. We've developed them as we go along. Some areas of our country are doing very well. Others are doing less well. It will probably, unfortunately, get worse before it gets better. Something I don't like saying about things, but that's the way it is. It's the way, it's what we have. You look over the world, it's all over the world, and it tends to do that. The governors are working very, very hard, and we are supporting them 100%. Everything they need, they get, and we are taking good care. We have tremendous supplies and a great supply chain, whether it's ventilators or gowns or just about anything they need.
And President Trump also gave statistics on those who are vulnerable to the coronavirus and then said this.
We're asking everybody that when you are not able to socially distance, wear a mask, get a mask. Whether you like the mask or not, they have an impact, they'll have an effect, and we need everything we can get.
And as of yesterday, the number of coronavirus cases is more than 3.8 million in the United States, with the death toll at more than 141,000. Congressional leaders continue working on plans for a relief package. On the Senate floor, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell outlined a relief package from the Republicans.
Kids, jobs, and health care. Kids, jobs, and health care. Surveys show the American people's top priorities for reopening are child care and K through 12 schools. This country wants its kids back in the classroom this fall, learning, exploring, making friends. Their educations depend on it. In some cases, their safety depends on it. And so do the livelihoods of working parents. The American Academy of Pediatrics stated unambiguously that our goal must be in-person instruction. But of course, parents, teachers, and doctors all agree that it has to be as safe as possible. That's where the Senate comes in. And this majority is preparing legislation that will send $105 billion so that educators have the resources they need to safely reopen. That is more money than the House Democrats set aside for a similar fund, by the way. And that's in addition to support for child care needs. It's amazing how you can find room to find serious priorities when you take a pass on the far left daydreams. Second, the economic slowdown that has hurt millions and millions of Americans. Before this crisis, we had never had 7 million Americans receiving unemployment at the same time. Today, we have 17 million. More than a million people have filed new unemployment claims every single week for more than 4 months now. The American job market needs another shot of adrenaline. Senate Republicans are laser-focused on getting American workers their jobs back. Our bill takes several specific incentives to hire and retain workers and turn the dials on those policies way up. The legislation will help reimburse for safe workplaces so that Main Street can afford the PPE, testing, cleaning, or remodeling to protect workers and entice customers. The ingenuity and spirit of America's small business is impossible to overstate, but they still face a tough road. With the majority of businesses expected to exhaust their initial paycheck protection funding this summer, we'll also be proposing a targeted second round of the PPP with a special eye toward hard-hit businesses. And speaking of building on what worked in the CARES Act, we want another round of direct payments to help American families keep driving our national comeback. Helping to create more American jobs is an urgent moral priority. And these are just some of the policies we're discussing that will help that happen. In addition to kids and jobs, our third major focus is healthcare. The reason is obvious. If we lose control of the virus, or if research stalls, then everything else will be window dressing. Our proposal will dedicate even more resources to the fastest race for a new vaccine in human history, along with diagnostics and treatments. Our bill will also protect seniors from a potential spike in premiums. And the federal government will continue to support hospitals, providers, and testing. These are just some of the elements that Senate Republicans are discussing among ourselves and with the administration. But there's one more central proposal that ties kids, jobs, and health care all together. As I've said for months, the next recovery package will include strong legal protections for the health care workers who save strangers' lives and the schools, colleges, charities, and businesses that want to reopen. The American people will not see their historic recovery gobbled up by trial lawyers who are itching to follow the pandemic with a second epidemic of frivolous lawsuits.
That's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor earlier today. Speaking to reporters after a lunch meeting with Democratic leaders, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer criticized Republicans for not working with Democrats on a coronavirus relief package.
Even after all this time, more than two months after the HEROES bill passed, the president's chief of staff today said that Republicans were, quote, on their own 20-yard line when it comes to their proposal. What is going on here? This party is incapable of governing at any time, let alone when we have such great health and economic crises. They're just totally incompetent, totally in disarray, totally at war with one another. Well, we don't have time. We don't have time for this mess the Republicans are in. Congress needs to act quickly. But right now, the Republicans are playing a dangerous game of chicken with pandemic relief, fighting with each other, writing their own corporate-focused bill, and refusing to engage with Democrats in either chamber. I urge my Republican colleagues, all of them or at least the saner of them, to abandon their one-party, one-chamber approach and immediately begin bipartisan, bicameral negotiations on the next round of COVID legislation. They shouldn't waste everybody's time constructing a partisan bill that benefits corporations and big special interests and instead work with us on something that can pass. One final point. President Trump is committing one of the greatest failures of presidential leadership in our nation's history. It may be the greatest failure, maybe rivaled by Buchanan exacerbating the divisions in the country before the Civil War, but nothing else. Trump hasn't focused on addressing the problem. There's no national testing strategy. He hasn't used the DPA to make more PPE. He has pushed states like Arizona, Texas, Florida to reopen too quickly. Now he's trying to cut the funding for testing, which even some Republicans want. And now things are a lot worse because President Trump doesn't have a plan to deal with the situation. He's just saying he's just waiting for COVID to disappear. It ain't disappearing. Leader McConnell, in a rare act of distancing himself from Trump, had the courage, quote unquote, to say that COVID is still with us. The president can't even model good behavior and encourage Americans to wear masks.
During that news conference, Senator Schumer continued to take aim at President Donald Trump, but this time for a signed memorandum released by the president today that seeks to bar people in the U.S. illegally from being counted in congressional reapportionment.
This order isn't worth the paper it's printed on and will be struck down by the courts. Attempting to weaponize the census for political gain is yet another racially driven attack by a president and an administration that wrongly views immigrants as the enemy when they are a vital part of our society. This heartless order will only stoke fear and deprive already underfunded communities across America of much-needed federal resources across all of our government, including education, transportation, infrastructure, and more. It's mean, it's vicious, it's typical of Donald Trump.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer speaking to reporters earlier today. Also, President Trump signed a memorandum earlier today claiming that undocumented migrants should not be counted in the census for purposes of deciding how many members of Congress are apportioned to each state. The memo does not say how the U.S. Census Bureau could distinguish citizens from non-citizens because counters are prohibited from asking a citizenship question. And you may remember a Supreme Court decision from last year which blocks the president's attempt to add a citizenship question to the census. Campaign 2020 here on C-SPAN Radio. Joe Biden, the presumptive 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, delivered remarks in Newcastle, Delaware, on his plan to help the economy recover from the coronavirus pandemic. But first, he criticized President Trump's response to the pandemic.
It's been reported by the president's staff that the president is, quote, not really working this anymore. He doesn't want to be distracted by it. Doesn't want to be distracted by it. His own staff admits that Donald Trump fails the most important test of being an American president. The duty to care for you, for all of us. You know, it's also been reported that he'll block any funding for more testing and tracing in the next COVID relief bill, which is being discussed right now on the floor of the United States Congress. Just as states report record cases and hospitalizations and deaths continue to rise, this man simply doesn't understand. He can't deal with our economic crisis without serving and saving and solving the public health crisis. For all his bluster about his expertise on the economy, he's unable to explain how it will actually help working families hit the hardest. You know, he's quit on you, and he's quit on this country. But this election is not just about him. It's about us. It's about you. It's about what we'll do. What a president's supposed to do. The president's supposed to care, to lead, to take responsibility, to never give up. That's what presidents are supposed to do.
The former vice president then rolled out his coronavirus relief plan, which he called his Build Back Better plan.
I call it Build Back Better because we can't just build back to the way things were before. We have to do it better. And the first plank of my Build Back Better plan rejects the defeatist view that automation and globalization mean we can't ensure American workers lead to a future made in America. Made in America. The second plank helps us outcompete the rest of the world and tackle climate change. And I'll put millions of Americans to work in good union jobs, modernizing their infrastructure, while building a clean energy future, increasing jobs. Today, I'm outlining the third plank of my Build Back Better program, mobilizing a 21st century care and elderly childhood education workforce to deal with the caregiving crisis, and it's a crisis in this country. If we truly want to reward work in this country, we have to ease the financial burden of care that families are carrying. We have to elevate the compensation of those providing the care, the benefits and dignity of caregiving workers and early childhood educators.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, the presumptive 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, delivering remarks in Newcastle, Delaware, earlier today. Washington Today will be back in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today for Tuesday, July 21st. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba with these headlines. The Department of Homeland Security responds to critics in Portland, Oregon. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in London discussing the Chinese government's response to COVID-19 and a House hearing on removing Confederate statues on federal land. We begin with the federal crackdown over the Portland protests. In a news conference, Acting U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf says the department supports peaceful protests.
Unfortunately, what we are seeing in Portland every night, roughly from midnight to 4:30 or 5 a.m., is the complete opposite. Again, what is occurring in Portland in the early hours of every morning is not peaceful protesting. These individuals are organized, and they have one mission in mind: to burn down or to cause extreme damage to the federal courthouse and to law enforcement officers. At times, we also see them targeting city property. These individuals congregate in the same area night after night. We see them planning their attacks. And yet the city of Portland takes little to no action to stop or disperse this crowd. These individuals carry lasers, baseball bats, explosive fireworks, metal pipes, glass bottles, accelerants, and other weapons, all targeting federal facilities and federal law enforcement. And yet the city of Portland takes little to no action. These individuals have repeatedly destroyed protective fencing, extensively graffitied the courthouse, torn plywood down from the courthouse and lit it on fire, have erected barriers to block entrances to courthouses, attempted to breach the courthouse, have thrown explosive materials in the courthouse, and again, the city of Portland takes little to no action. The reasons increased DHS personnel are important or in Portland is twofold. One, violent criminal activity every single night for 52 nights. And two, the lack of action from city officials and law enforcement. Department law enforcement officers are there to protect a symbol of justice, the courthouse. We mostly do that in a very defensive posture. However, we have been forced, because of lack of local law enforcement presence, to take measures such as arrest to protect our officials. The law is clear on what our authority entails. Specifically, federal statute states that the Secretary of Homeland Security, and I'm quoting, shall protect buildings, grounds, and property that are owned, occupied, and secured by the federal government. The law goes on to state that the department can conduct investigations, again, I'm quoting, on and off property in question, on offenses that may have been committed against property owned and occupied by the federal government or persons on that property. In other words, we are expressly allowed to leave federal property to conduct investigations and arrest individuals who have damaged federal property. We do this, of course, in conjunction with the Department of Justice. Many of our law enforcement officers in Portland have other responsibilities around the country. They are away from their families and putting their lives at risk every night. The smear attacks leveled against our officers is disgusting. As it relates to CBP officers deployed in Portland, these highly trained officers are in multi-camouflage wear because they work on the southwest border and they work in an environment that demands that. That is their everyday uniform, and it is completely appropriate. They have insignia on their uniforms that read police, and they have patches, and the acting commissioner will talk about that in a little bit, that indicate which agency they are from. Let me repeat, these officers are not military. Let's not confuse that. I've seen inaccurate press reporting accusing them of being military. They are not military. They are civilian police officers. These police officers are not stormtroopers. They are not the Gestapo, as some have described them. That description is offensive, it's hyperbolic, and it's dishonest. And every law enforcement officer and every reasonable American knows this.
Acting U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf. Meanwhile, on the Senate floor, Democratic Oregon Representative Earl Blumenauer condemned the use of civilian law enforcement officers in Portland.
Ostensibly to protect monuments and statues. What about protecting the American people and their constitutional right to protest? Don't attack our people with tear gas without warning. Seriously injuring people exercising their right to protest. Things that people can see on video with their own eyes. Watching the gentleman hit with a projectile requiring serious surgery, inflicting facial injuries, a person just asking what was going on, having officers assault him, breaking his hand. They can't be that inept. It must be purposeful. Taking a very challenging situation in my hometown and making it worse. But make no mistake, this isn't just about Portland, Oregon. We watched what they did in Lafayette Park across from the White House, again, assaulting innocent protesters in order to have a photo app for the President of the United States. There's indications that they're moving to Chicago, Atlanta, Kansas City, Seattle. Who's going to be less? Talking about the challenges that have been taken in Philadelphia with a reforming district attorney, Leader Krasner, and somehow holding him up as an example of breakdown in law and order, an assault on the American public. Portland, Oregon is not out of control. To be sure, there are some people who have strong feelings, and there are some who have done things that are inappropriate and unlawful. But that is the challenge of our local officials and our state officials to manage it. Not having somebody unwelcome, uninvited, and unprepared coming in to take this difficult situation and make it worse.
That was Democratic Oregon Representative Earl Blumenauer. On the Senate floor earlier today, and as you heard from Acting U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf, he said the protests there in Portland have continued for more than 52 nights. In London, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab held a joint news conference. Secretary Pompeo criticized the Chinese government over COVID-19.
We, of course, began with the challenge presented by the Chinese Communist Party and the COVID-19 virus that originated in Wuhan, China. On behalf of the American people, I want to extend my condolences to the British people from your losses from this preventable pandemic. The CCP's exploitation of this disaster to further its own interests has been disgraceful. Rather than helping the world, General Secretary Xi has shown the world the party's true face. We talked about how we've seen Hong Kong's freedoms crushed. We've watched the CCP bully its neighbors, militarize features in the South China Sea, and instigate a deadly confrontation with India. I want to take this opportunity to congratulate the British government for its principled responses to these challenges. You've made a sovereign decision to ban Huawei from future 5G networks. You've joined other free nations to condemn China's broken promises on the Sino-British Treaty. You generously opened your doors to Hong Kongers who seek nothing more than fleeing just for some freedom. And yesterday you suspended your extradition treaty and extended your arms embargo on China to Hong Kong itself. We support those sovereign choices. We think well done.
Also during the news conference, Secretary Mike Pompeo discussed Huawei.
That we seek from Huawei. We have an end state for the people of the United States, which is to make sure that the data sets, the private data that belongs to Americans, doesn't end up in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. So our efforts aren't aimed at any one particular company or one particular business. They are aimed at protecting American national security, and we will continue to take actions against every entity that engages in trade behaviors that are inconsistent with American national security or uses telecommunications infrastructure in ways that pose threats to the United States of America, whether that's to our military information and our high-end national security information, or the average citizens' private information that ought not be in the hands of the Chinese national security apparatus. No American should engage in ordinary activity on their cell phone or on their laptop computer or talking on their phone. No American should have the risk that that data set is going to be in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. We're determined to make sure that doesn't happen. So the actions you have seen us take against multiple companies, including Huawei, are reflective of that security mission that we have.
Secretary Mike Pompeo. Now, according to the Evening Standard, the actions from the British government drew a stinging response from Beijing. In a tweet, China's ambassador to London tweeted, quote, "The UK blatantly interfered in China's internal affairs and contravened international law and the basic norms governing international relations. China has never interfered in UK's internal affairs. The UK should do the same to China. Otherwise, it must bear the consequences." Back here on Capitol Hill, a descendant of Confederate General Robert E. Lee spoke before a House subcommittee hearing on the removal of Confederate statues. The Reverend Robert W. Lee IV called for Confederate statues across the country to be removed.
"I am not the first Robert Lee to testify before the United States Congress. One did in 1866 during Reconstruction. It is indeed another person who bears a first and surname identical to mine, and whose lineage I bear as a nephew of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. But I've been clear that I dare not speak for my entire family or for even the general himself, as some still revere him and see no reason for this hearing today. I will instead let the famed Confederate soldier speak for himself, as his documented testimony before Congress can be found easily in your records. When asked before Congress and the country if black American citizens were equally capable of acquiring knowledge as white Americans, that, Robert Lee said, I do not think that he is capable of acquiring knowledge as the white man is. There are some more apt than others. I have known some to acquire knowledge and skill in their trade or profession. I've had servants of my own who learned to read and write very well." Lee was later asked by a senator from Missouri during the same hearing if Southern states should allow the suffrage of black Americans. Lee remarked, "My own opinion is that at this time they cannot vote intelligently, and that giving them the right of suffrage would open the door to great deals of demagogism and lead to embarrassments in various ways. I raise these two statements and moments from the other Robert Lee's testimony to highlight the difference and dissonance from what this Robert Lee is about to say. I fully believe, along with a host of other amazing citizens of this great country, that black lives matter. And for us to continue to celebrate a man who questioned the education, disparaged the right to vote of black life, and had previously fought for the continued enslavement of Africans on the North American continent is an affront to those now who are suffering under current weights of oppression. That said, I want to uplift two people who ultimately shared that with me. One was Janie Bowman, my black nanny in the South in the 1990s, who sang the sweet hour of prayer while I slept in her arms when my parents worked. Though she's not on this earth today, I know in the hereafter she, along with countless others who experienced racism and bigotry and white supremacy, are cheering you all on to show that the cost of following what's right might not be politically expedient, but it is incredibly good. Likewise, my confirmation mentor, a strong woman of color named Bertha Hamilton, taught me that I could take my Confederate symbols down and still live to tell the tale. She implored me to remove a flag and a picture I had in my room because she saw my life, my calling, as more valuable than these symbols. I'm here today to say the same is true for all of you. If we are honest, the answer is clear. We cannot remain complicit with these monuments. We cannot remain silent anymore. If we do so, our silence becomes agreement and endorsement to complicity."
That was Reverend Robert W. Lee IV. He testified earlier today at the House Natural Resources, National Parks, Forests, and Public Lands Subcommittee hearing. You've been listening to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. Thank you for joining us. You can find this program and all of our podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts.